Why don't you come up and listen to the Comedy-O-Rama Hour?
Pictures are in your head, my dear.
They're more than in my head.
Oh, yeah.
The Comedy-O-Rama Hour presents The Misadventures of Sherlock Holmes, the honest and true memoirs of a non-entity. Episode 12, Sherlock Holmes in Further Trouble.
Now let me say, at the very beginning, that the thought had never crossed my mind of making public these scribbled notes that have grown yellowed and brittle. Well, except this one, which was written on yellow foolscap and was always yellow. These notes, which I had put from my hand so many years ago. I am Dr. John Watson, and I shall always remember with a certain dread that night. So long ago. When my dear friend, Sherlock Holmes, who had spent many of his years fighting crime in London, to the detriment of his violin lessons and my ears, found himself facing the possibility of common criminal prosecution. First of all, now this isn't the same as starting at the very beginning. We did that. First of all, let me say it was a cold, forbidding night. Snow flurries had been predicted, and having no penchant for the out-of-doors when the weather was inclement, regardless of those stories I wrote in which we drove off in a pounding rain, we didn't. We waited until it cleared up. I have a tendency to dramatize things. With a light chuckle, he looked up from his endeavor and said,
I say, Watson, old fellow, what are you planning to do with your quiet evening at home?
I haven't decided yet.
I have. I'm spending my quiet evening quite profitably.
Just remember to tell me about it.
I'll tell you now. I have just dashed off a definitive treatise on nose prints.
Nose prints? It will prove invaluable in the detection of crime. Nose prints.
I am convinced, Watson, that a burglar, in the anticipation and excitement of stealing some object of value from a house
or flat.
A flat? Of course, a flat. Why not? That's very good, Watson. A flat indeed. In the anticipation and excitement of stealing some object of value from a house, a flat, would, before the actual execution of this act, press his nose against the window pane to see and gloat over the prize that would soon be his.
Your contention being...
My contention being that he would leave his nose print, and that no two nose prints are alike.
Yes, I think I'll go to bed.
Wait, I haven't finished. And when the nose print is properly analyzed, the burglar can be speedily brought to book. What is that strange expression on your face, Watson? Is it gas?
No, my dear fellow. I was merely making a mental note to give cursory mentions to nose prints when I got around to writing up this adventure.
What adventure?
I'll see to it that we have some sort of an adventure tonight. I'll dream up something. Another of those dreadful potboilers I write about you and your pathetic little skirmishes with crime.
But I'm all settled and snuggy here.
You're all settled and snuggy here, but I am bored out of my skull.
Bored? Look around, Watson. You have all these accumulated medical journals to read. Quite. Yes, I do. But I'm just not in the proper mood. I don't know what I am in the mood for, but it is certainly something more interesting than medical journals.
Well, I would think their perusal would add to your knowledge and bolster your expertise.
You would think that, eh?
I think that any thinking man would think that.
Did Mrs. Hudson leave out any of that cold ham?
Don't forget, Watson, you, as a doctor, were put upon this good earth to minister to the aches and pains of a suffering humanity.
Poppycock.
I was put upon this good earth because my parents had this thing about each other. And they properly executed documents which legalized such activity.
You mean a marriage license?
You're very quick.
And my quickness serves me well in my profession. As a doctor, you have obligations to the demands of your profession as well. It seems to me that you are slighting them.
You ever hear of malpractice? If one of my patients has anything worse than a hangnail, I refuse to become involved. I absolutely refuse.
But how can you? You're a doctor.
I will experience no career worries whatsoever. As long as I continue to fabricate these preposterous adventures of yours, and as long as there is a public gullible enough to notice them in the bookstalls and... read them.
Is this a reference to what you said before about writing dreadful potboilers about me?
Of course. And your little skirmishes with crime.
Pathetic. Pathetic. You said pathetic skirmishes with crime.
Pathetic little skirmishes with crime.
That's it. That's exactly what you said.
I'm glad we got it right.
Well, it's attention to detail. What do you mean that you write adventures about me? What could you possibly write about? My life is so... so...
That's it. Your life is so-so. That's where the fabrication comes in. With my words, my delicious sense of metaphor, I embroider. I give color, excitement, and romance to your mundane, trivial, inconsequential daily brushes with sneak thieves, fanny pinchers, suspicious wives, and the like.
Fanny pinchers?
I weave, with my innate good taste, literary talents, and my sense of the bizarre, a magic spell in the form of the myriad mystical...
Fabrications?
Fabrications, thank you.
It just came to me.
Which blended well with the London fog, the deliciously sinister denizens of Limehouse, and the spine-tingling sound of horse hooves on midnight cobblestones.
Could you give me an example of it?
There, you see! You obviously never read the ruddy tripe I write about you. In my journal, I might add.
Tripe?
I capitalize. On a minor, embarrassingly unworkable talent of yours.
Talent?
And within the intricate mosaic of my profound cerebral concentration.
Concentration?
Must you echo everything I say?
Echo?
I devised a unique, capsulized, dramatic example of your powers of observation, and I called it deduction.
Which is what?
Deduction is... for instance, this morning. You stopped by the snack bar at Charing Cross Station for an onion bun and a spinach omelette. Oh, yes, and you tripped over a cat near London Bridge.
It's true. It's true, Watson. Your deduction is true. I did have a spinach omelette, but how could you possibly...
How could I possibly know? Because you, at this very moment... And it's disgusting. You have a dribble of spinach between your two front teeth. Well, do something about it. Thumb and forefinger. Do away with it. Holmes... Not in your pocket. The trash box. At any rate, that's a deduction.
But how did you know about the cat? Another deduction?
Exactly. Holmes, you are the clumsiest man in London. There is nothing that you don't trip over. And knowing about the colony of homeless cats which infest the London Bridge area because of the stinking fish remains, you most certainly would find a cat to trip over. brilliant. I am properly impressed. However, you were wrong about the onion bun.
No, I was not wrong about the onion bun.
You were?
I wasn't.
You were. Now, let me explain. I ordered an onion bun, but the onion bun man was late this morning.
Well, it comes to the same thing.
Well, hardly.
It comes to the same thing because I left myself an out. If you'd listened, you would have heard me say, you stopped by the snack bar at Charing Cross Station for an onion bun and a spinach omelette. I did not say that you had got an onion bun and that you had devoured it.
Well, it comes to the same thing.
Well, hardly.
You're quibbling, Watson. Admit it.
Well,
admit it.
I was right about the omelette and the cat.
I'll give you that.
Those.
Whatever.
At any rate, there is your example of deduction, Holmes. A facet of the fascinating character you have become through my facile fingers on the fool's cap.
Why don't you talk like an ordinary human being, Watson?
There's not enough money in it. Before our paths crossed, Holmes, you were nothing. I created you, Holmes. And now, because of the cavalcade of astonishing but fabricated adventures you've had, and because of my brilliant imagination and the ability to put those adventures on paper, you have become, finally, what, Holmes? Quickly!
Something?
Something.
I guessed right.
Let it off. Come in.
Well, now I'd say you are growing careless, Mr. Holmes. Whoa, what a hide in your notorious Professor Moriarty. I wouldn't have said come in. You better jot that down, Dr. Watson. It isn't often himself can supply him his own meaningful dialogue. Well, I can see the two gentlemen are in this evening. Watson was wondering about cold ham.
Yes, fairly apparent.
Watson was wondering about the cold ham. I was wondering about it itself before I threw it out. Watson was wondering if there was any left. I threw it out. Well, then there was some left. That's deduction.
There must be a reason for your looking in, Mrs. Hudson.
There is indeed. I've been saving up a few choice born thicken complaints. You got any best rooms? Front view? Meals? Whenever you're of a mind to be taking them? My Irish wit and wisdom I sort of throw in. A turn of phrase is what I have, a way of speaking, a point of view. The Irish took that great, consonant-ridden language of the English and gave it a breath of music. They sculpted the clay of it. They added new contours so you thrilled to the sound of its thinning valleys and hills from the desolate flat. They folded into the batter of speech. The light, airy meringue of the fairy's lexicon that freed the tongue and seduced one and all with their charm.
The ham was tainted.
And you, Dr. Watson, the great writer. A pompous and proper phrase maker you've become. But not where I'm concerned. You have only to put your head outside the door to enrich the feeble tales you tell with the meaningful dialogue my facile tongue could muster.
I put mustard on mine. I didn't notice.
It's all you and this Mr. Sherlock Holmes here. It's an ego trip and a hansom cab. What are you doing there?
I'm jotting that down. It's a nice phrase.
I've alluded to a few times, I'll admit to that. But any spurious lines you've attributed to me have not been properly researched. You've only used me to advance the plot and develop the continuity. This is fascinating, Watson.
Oh, do be quiet.
There's been no delving into my personality, no rounding out of my character, my aspirations, my dreams, my psyche.
My foot. What you just said. That should tell you something right there.
Johnny, what?
That you are not that essential to my plots. You're peripheral. You're not pivotal.
Pivotal? You speak of me as if I was some frumpy, fast-paced, slovenly, illiterate, provincial, fish-eyed, frog-faced.
I'll say this. You have a way with words.
This is fascinating, too, what I am. I'm dear, faithful. Fat?
Old?
Middle-aged, Mrs. Hudson. All you have to do is snap your fingers, and I'm supposed to jump like a gazelle?
More like a pregnant heart of beast than quite of this.
Mrs. Hudson. Let's face facts. In your small, miserly, greedy, self-serving way,
I'm sure you fully appreciate the publicity given you in this uncondemned Baker Street fire trap. It's netted you a pretty penny from drooling romantics who swoon at the prospect of having lodgings under the same roof as the master.
There's a lot in what you say. And a lot in what you don't say. But I must be honest. I can't deny it, Dr. Watson. Money talks. And I am a good listener. But, I must be getting on to the second reason I come up here tonight.
You could have easily dispensed with the first reason.
If for one blessed moment I thought you meant that, Dr. Watson, I'd be perturbed.
Be perturbed. Fascinating. Accept us as we are, Mrs. Hudson. Nothing will change. You will maintain the meniality at which you are so adept. Living with us is just something you'll have to live with. It's like shaving around a wart.
Does Mrs. Hudson have a wart? I don't see it.
There'll be no pudding tonight. You got a scurril type waiting downstairs to see you. I'll send him up. Here, you tradesman! Get on up here!
You are right, Tom, I say. They kept me waiting that drafty old full of my ales as it was.
Hello?
I take it you have a name?
But Stilbury's not here for this sort of thing, let me tell you right off. You're a no. No beating about the shrub.
No beating about the bush. Because of the established flora of that cliche.
You watch it, Mr. Albert, but people in their proper place for letter, eh?
Hello?
Perhaps you'd enlighten us as to the purpose of your call.
Hello?
I will indeed. Indeed, I will. You'll be very point of my coming here after all, won't you?
why do you address all your remarks to him? And not me. Whom did you wish to see?
Him. Sherlock Holmes.
I'm Sherlock Holmes. He's Dr. Watson.
Well, I had it wrong way about it, didn't I? I thought you was Dr. Watson.
Why?
Well, he don't look as tacky as you is one right good reason. In other words, he don't look stupid.
You should have asked.
Tell us, Mr. Stoller, what is it exactly that you want?
I want a world-famous detective, Mr. Sherlock Holmes. That's him, right?
Right, too.
Well, I want him to find a bloke with Dunny Mont Teresa.
When was this?
It was this very morning, near London Bridge.
My great heart goes out to you, Mr. Stover. Tragedy is a specialty of mine. The London Bridge, did you say? Funnily enough, I tripped over a cat at London Bridge this morning.
You tripped over a cat?
Watson here says I'm one of the clumsiest men in London.
Was a cat named Teresa?
Teresa's a cat?
My Teresa's a cat. And you say you tripped over a cat? Stay out of this house.
Why? There's nothing to implicate me.
Now go bark me, bucko.
Watson, do something. He's becoming physical.
Well, he can't be mental. Here, let's go home for a minute. Still a home for a minute.
I lost my composure there for a moment. I have been severely put upon. I'm not myself.
What have you got there? Take a look at this bit of fuzz, which was stuck to poor Teresa's collar. Well?
This bit of fuzz. It's Tweedy.
Tweedy, indeed. Tweedy is what it is. Now, let me take this here bit of fuzz and compare it to Mr. Sherlock Holmes' trousers. It is the same material.
It is Tweedy, I'll give you that. But how do we know that Teresa was actually done in? What proof do you have, eh?
Proof? You want proof, do you? Oh, gives you proof. She's here, with me.
Where?
In this paper sack.
Oh, my God.
I give you Teresa. Teresa, meet the pretty gentleman.
Oh, put it away. It's a dead cat.
Stover, listen to me. What positive proof do you have that that is indeed Teresa?
looks like, to me, just another cat.
Oh, I was prepared for that query, I was. Note the inscription on her collar, put down in printed letters, I quote, Teresa, property of Bert Stover.
Do you have any witnesses? Do you? Do you?
The suspense is killing me.
Do you?
I have here an affidavit. An affidavit from Lemuel Sturgis. Think about that.
The name means nothing to me. Who is Lemuel Sturgis?
Lemuel Sturgis is... the Onion Bun Man.
Oh. I never knew his name. Only his buns.
Acing the whole thing. Now, what do you got to say about that?
Well, if he'd got his onion buns delivered on time, I might have had one with my spinach omelette, and I wouldn't have tripped over it. I wouldn't have tripped.
Holmes, quiet.
Instead, Mr. Sturgis was skulking about looking at dead cats.
Teresa was my dead cat. He's a witness. He'll testify in me behalf.
Don't misunderstand what I'm about to say, Mr. Stover. You can and should expect compassion from your betters. And while the untimely death of Teresa is unfortunate, looking at it realistically, of what consequence is it?
I'll give you consequence. Teresa, the deceased one of whom I speak, I would like you fine gentlemen to know, is, or was, worse luck, the blinking public poster for Kitty Cat Cuisine. The well-known cat food preparation, what comes dry and in tins. Where you been? You must have seen the great gaudy posters of Teresa eating a bloody slop.
Yes, I recall him. In Piccadilly Circus it was.
The advertisement was so compelling, I bought a tin the other day. And we don't even have a cat. Mrs. Hudson does.
Well, Teresa was a natural-born sale.
Mrs. Hudson took it to be a canapé and spread it on crackers for Watson and me. Delicious. The crackers, I mean. The Kitty cuisine wasn't all that good. We didn't finish the tin.
Rambling on and on, aren't you? Not willing to face up to the music. I'm holding you liable, Mr. Sherlock Holmes. You've done in Teresa, a star performer, and my soul means a income.
But I have nothing. You can't get blood out of a carrot.
Turnip.
Or a turnip either. Private detecting is slow right now. Watson here says that he's trying to enhance my mediocrity, but it's not all that simple. I mean, he says I am, but it's not. I mean,
drop it.
Mr. Holmes, in spite of myself, I've taken a slight liking to you.
I grow on people.
I got a proposition to make to you. It just might save your bacon.
I'd prefer a more positive word than might, but do go on.
Well, I'm a promoter of sorts, and I've acquired a bit of land. Now, what I got a mind to do is put in roads, footpaths, and houses and the like for people to live in. It's my dream.
And what is the proposition you wish to make to Holmes?
Oh, I'd like to call this house and development Sherlock Holmes, if I had the exclusive rights to his name.
Sherlock Holmes?
Right. See, my thinking went like this. I don't read, see. But I've heard about all the Sherlock Holmes adventures and how every Tom, Dick, and what's-his-name is buying them and they're making a packet at the bookstalls.
For who?
Where you been? For Dr. Watson. He writes the bleeding tripe, don't he?
He told me he was keeping a journal.
So, if you give me the rights to your name, Mr. Holmes, well, I'd turn a deaf ear to that pasty face of yours and I wouldn't prosecute on the Teresa matter. And then when the money starts rolling in from the property sales, I'll even give you a small percentage of the profits. Think it over, Mr. Holmes. There'll be a bit more than you're getting from old Sawbones here.
I'm not getting anything from him. Watson, I want to see you about the adventures you're writing.
We'll make an appointment.
Leave off with him, Mr. Holmes. Stick with me. Can't you see it? It's a bleeding natural is what it is. The world-famous detective, Mr. Sherlock Holmes, will attract no end of people to me housing development. I'll be wealthy, Mr. Holmes, and you won't do half bad yourself. And in my new position as a gentleman, you'll give me the name of your tailor.
Well, I don't know about that.
I have a question.
Well, you've been very quiet.
My question is this. Why are you asking Holmes for permission to give you the use of his name?
Oh, I got lost there.
somewhere. You might better call your project Sherlock Holmes, without the L.
What L?
Why, the L in Holmes, of course, it's obvious.
You mean to tell me that Holmes has got an L in it?
It's spelled H-O-L-M-E-S, and all you need is H-O-M-E-S.
What are you doing to me, Watson?
And there would be no permission for rights necessary. There would be no permission for rights necessary. He heard you. Look at his face.
The deal's off.
Off?
Off. I will do very nicely without you, Mr. Sherlock Holmes, with an L.
Does this mean I won't get my small percentage of the profits?
It does indeed.
What will I get? Action.
Thrown in the pokey, most likely, because I'm suing you, Mr. Sherlock Holmes. That's what I'll be doing for doing in my Teresa.
But what about your blueprints?
First things first. Now what have you got to say?
For what it's worth, my tailor's name is Goldfarb.
You have been listening to a dramatized version of The Misadventures of Sherlock Holmes, written by Dawes Butler and Joe Bevilacqua, and voiced and directed by Dawes Butler and Joe Bevilacqua. This is your announcer, Joe Bev, asking you to stay tuned. There's more of the Comedy-O-Rama Hour coming up after this.
Buongiorno, buongiorno, everyone. I'm the Art Father. And if you like me in my movie, then you won't want to miss this collection of my all-time favorite hit songs. Get it? Hit? Anyway, how can you pass up this offer of great melodies such as...
A Bullet for Joey, as told by me, while he sleeps in his bed, I'll put one in his head.
Well, how about these songs?
H is for the way you hire him. I is for the way you ice him. T is very, very excruciating when you throw him off the express train. Oh, hit is what I have in store. Hit is what I hired you for. I'll make you an offer you can't refuse.
Yes, these are magnificent songs sung by the great artists such as Vinnie Gumbani, Sonny Bonagalli, and Gino Manicotti, and many more.
I wonder who's shooting her now. Put your guns away for another day.
So, if you order right now, I'll also throw in one of my all-time favorites.
If you steal money from the Don, he'll stick your head in the John. That's a rub-out.
So hurry and order for your collection of famous hit songs. And don't wait for one of the other families to get into the record business and cut into this piece of the action. My boys are on duty 24 hours a day, standing by at telephones. Your telephones, that is. So call today. And bonus there. Thank you.
Waterlog Productions.
Comedy-O-Rama is supported by Bear Manor Media, publisher of the authorized biography of cartoon voice legend Dawes Butler, characters actor.
Yogi Bear.
For more information, check out BearManorMedia.com.